if you knew what you had to go through, like in terms of starting a business, because, you know, I had so many ups and downs and there is, you know, so many challenges to overcome. So if you knew all that, I don't know if you actually would do it.
Hello and welcome to Don't Stop Us Now. I'm Claire Hatton.
And I'm Greta Thomas. And we're on a mission to help you achieve your goals.
We're all about sharing the secrets of the world's most innovative and pioneering successful women. Hear their uplifting stories and practical advice right here.
Yes, right here. And if you're enjoying this podcast, then why not sign up for our newsletter at hello@don'tstopusnow.co and keep listening for this week's latest episode.
Hello, everyone. Well, we're certainly living in unusual and uncertain times, aren't we, Gret?
Yeah, that is absolutely for sure. We're very unusual times.
Yeah, what with coronavirus spreading and so many businesses hurting, we have an unprecedented episode today.
Yeah, we really do. Our guest this week is Christina Karlsson, the entrepreneur and founder of global Swedish design and stationery business Kiki K. Now, what's unprecedented about this episode is that just yesterday, as we were in the process of putting this out to the world, Christina's beloved 20-year-old business fell into administration, and the latest news is saying they're looking for buyers or investors or potentially a restructure to keep the business alive. So let's hope they can do that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just so sad for Christina and Paul and every Kiki K customer around the world. But, you know, really they were hit by a perfect storm, what with going into the UK before Brexit, and then having the riots in Hong Kong, a soft retail season
over Christmas,
and then the bushfires in Australia, and now coronavirus on top of the fact that everything's moving digital. You know, it's all happening at once.
I think a lot of retail businesses are suffering. Now, we recorded our interview with Christina 2 weeks ago, and while she talked about challenging times, she, not surprisingly, didn't go into details, and they probably would have been commercially sensitive anyway.
Yeah, we had no idea, and perhaps she didn't either then, at least know the seriousness of it. But for those of you who aren't familiar with Kiki K, it's famous for its beautiful notebooks and stationery. They have 65 stores in multiple countries, and their products are sold in 190 countries around the world.
Yeah, they have some true raving fans. But back to our conversation that we're really excited to share with you today. In this episode, Christina talks about the ups and downs of starting your own retail business and how tough you need to be to deal with all the challenges. Little did we know when she said that.
Absolutely. You'll also hear about Christina's passion for having dreams and chasing them. She's also written a book called Your Dream Life Starts Here to inspire others to write down their dreams and chase them. And you'll hear about how she credits becoming a mother with giving her more balance. And the quirky yet ingenious way Christina learned to perfect her business English early on.
So without further ado, enjoy this episode with the inspiring and positive Christina Karlsson.
Christina Karlsson, welcome to Don't Stop Us Now.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited.
Yeah, it's fantastic to have you here in Sydney with us. It's really exciting to get into your story and the story of Kiki K, the business that you run, and more importantly, you as a person. We usually start by just helping our listeners understand just a little bit about you by asking you the simple question, sometimes not so simple. How would you describe what you do today?
That's a good question. It's a bit of a challenging one, but I now have evolved as a business person, and my new crazy big dream is to inspire 101 million people to write down 3 dreams and then go and chase them. I think dreaming is really powerful, and that's how I started my journey, which I'm sure we're going to get it into. So that's kind of, you know, my overall umbrella, but obviously I also help running the business and help creating products. That is part of our purpose. I do a lot of talks and I also have my own podcast. So I do quite a lot of different things.
You certainly do. And for those listeners who don't know Kiki K,
yep,
which there might be a few because you're now in, how many countries are you in?
Well, retail stores, 5 countries. So Australia, New Zealand, Singapore, Hong Kong and the UK. But we sell to over 190 countries and territories around the world. So, and then we wholesale to people like you know, Selfridges and Harrods in the UK and Nordstrom in the US, etc. Yeah. So
Kiki K is an amazing stationery brand, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. Mm-hmm. Before we do, I'd love to sort of take you back and learn a little bit about you and your origins and your family and life and your childhood. So, you know, how would you describe your childhood?
Lovely childhood. I was very lucky and fortunate to have lovely parents, and I grew up on a farm.
Whereabouts?
In Sweden. It was very, you know, safe and, you know, really lovely. I guess that was one thing that I think has really shaped me as a person, is that we never got to trouble because we lived on a farm and it was work 24/7. As a kid, I always dreamt about seeing the world. And then as I finished school, I then traveled the world, and hence now I've been living
on the other side of the world.
On the other side of the world. So I follow the sun. So I spend summers in Sweden. So
How nice.
I feel like I have the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
I'm sure you can relate to that.
Absolutely. Absolutely, I can. It's interesting, you know, growing up in Sweden, there's a large part of the year where you don't really see the sun too much.
Yeah.
What was it that really inspired you to want to travel?
I think growing up on a farm, and, you know, I loved horses and I loved nature, but I wasn't like a true animal lover in terms of wanted to be working on the farm. So I wanted to see what was out there and something that perhaps was a bit more suitable for me. I started working really early, first in a supermarket and then for a guy who ran a restaurant. And he was like a true entrepreneur and, you know, was really hardworking. And he kind of really taught me that, you know, if you work hard, you can basically do anything. And I saw that quite early. I started to work for him when I was 13, and I worked there for 6 years.
Wow.
You know, every weekend. And also, I think, you know, we lived a very comfortable life, but I realized that if you were making money, you can, you know, spend that on travel and explore the world. So after I finished school, I did a year in the US and traveled and worked. And then I spent some time studied German in Germany. And then I ended up in Austria working in a ski resort. And then that's how I kind of met my partner, Paul, and then came to Australia.
Can you cast your mind back to landing in Australia with your then partner, now husband, Paul, and say 6 months down the track, can you remember your sort of impressions of Australia? And I don't know, were you in Melbourne at the time?
So I was.
What were your thoughts back then? Like, oh, this is a crazy country. It's so far away from anywhere, or?
Yes, you said those words perfectly. It was a big move for me. I found it really quite challenging, and especially, you know, moving away from family. And this was kind of a big deal. It wasn't just that I was going to stay for a few months and then go back. I was contemplating staying because I was with my partner. And then I was whinging and complaining a lot, asking every single day, what am I going to do with my life? So it was not just about Australia. I think I got like an early midlife crisis because I was kind of...
It was a dislocation crisis.
Yeah, exactly. So I was questioning a lot. And then I did complain perhaps a little bit too much. And I think Paul was a little bit over this complaining. So one morning at 3 a.m., I think I woke him up for the fifth time saying, what am I going to do with my life? And that's when he was saying, hey, enough. Let's write down what is important to you. So I took a piece of paper, and this is what I call my 3M list. And I wrote down what was important to me at the time. And I wrote down that I wanted to drive to work every day and loving it. So I was on a working holiday visa, so I couldn't really get a more permanent job. So what I was doing wasn't what I wanted to do. Then I wanted to have my own business, but I didn't know what that was going to be. And then I wanted to have a connection with Sweden. My little brother was sick at the time. So a couple of times I had to go home. And then I was thinking, if this ever happens again, I want to have the option to stay versus being employed with someone else. So that was important to somehow connect myself back to Sweden. Then I want to work with Swedish design because that's one of my passions. I really truly believe that doing something you love, life is too short not to. So that was really important to me. And then I wanted to make $500 a week. And that was based on like food, rent, and, you know, a trip home. So yeah, that was my 3 a.m. list.
I can really relate to the 3 a.m. list. And it's quite a sort of a famous story now, I think, with how you sort of came up with the beginnings of the idea for Kiki K.
Yeah.
Curious question. How was your English when you landed in Australia?
Pretty bad, actually. As part of writing this down, Kiki K wasn't really founded overnight, never is.
Yeah.
And often it doesn't come across in all the stories about me because often there's not enough time. It's often cut out in articles, etc. But I actually started looking at what I loved, and that was travel. And I will come and answer your question because this is all part of it.
Yeah.
I was so passionate about travel, so I knocked on what I thought was the best travel agent at the time in Melbourne, saying, hey, can I work for free? So I can just see if this is for me, because I didn't have the money to do the education to become a travel agent. And I wanted to see first if that was something that I wanted to do. So I started saying, hey, I can just do, you know, coffees. And then I started to book some travel, and then they paid for my education to be qualified. My English was really bad, and this was a corporate travel agent, so I had to do a lot of, you know, corporate communication. I used to, at night, go to the, this is when faxes was really big before emails, and I used to go in the recycle bins and collect different faxes so I could write like they did. And
wow.
I had a whole folder with different, anything from, you know, the PA to the managing director to consultants, just to really understand how they wrote corporate, you know, faxes or letters. And I had a whole folder, and when I went on holiday once, someone took over my position. And when I came back, she said, what is that folder? Oh, so that's my English education.
Templates.
Exactly.
That's so amazing.
Yeah. And so we've heard about the 3 a.m. list, but what kind of really galvanized you to make a start with
KikiK?
Yeah.
So when I was working in this travel agency, I started to pick up a lot of self-help books and read a lot. And then I was like, you know, I love traveling, but I don't actually love booking other people's travel.
Yeah.
So then I decided to go back to my list. And then because I had that I wanted to start my own business, I went out to buy some products, and I just couldn't find anything. And there's so much on the market now. But back then, it was a price-driven category here in Australia. And it was also...
This is stationery.
Stationery, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was, in my view, badly designed in terms of not what I wanted to put in my home office. And this, I was really focusing on the home office because I wanted to have my own business. And I thought I need a beautiful environment. And I just could not find anything that I thought was... for me. So then I was like, oh, that is so boring. And I was like a bit done. And then I got super excited and I thought, I'm going to actually do this myself. So I went home to Portland. I said, I think I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to open beautiful Swedish design stores around the world. And my favorite cities being, you know, London, Paris, New York, etc. Specialized in stationery. And he thought I was crazy. He's like, you understand, you have to, you know, employ people, you're going to have to design products, you're going to have to find manufacturers. You know, he just had a massive list of stuff that I had no idea about. Really good lessons for anyone listening who are thinking about doing anything that is a little bit out of their knowledge base or comfort zone is that it's really good to not know what you don't know. Because if you knew what you had to go through in terms of starting a business, because, you know, I had so many ups and you guys know that, ups and downs, and there is, you know, so many challenges to overcome. So if you knew all that, I don't know if you actually would do it. But you need to be obviously super passionate, because the days where things are tough, and there's plenty of those, and there are, you know, were days where I couldn't pay suppliers or pay, you know, our staff and or our team. I think being passionate and, you know, being so loving what you're doing is really important. And then for me, it was also having a clear vision really got me going.
What was Paul doing at the time?
So he was working for Ripka. So they were actually designing, manufacturing, wholesaling, retailing, and a global business. So he sat in this massive office knowing what I was talking about.
So he did have, that's what I was wondering, you know, what was the company again?
Rip Curl.
Oh, Rip Curl, the surf brand.
Yeah,
oh, very cool.
Yeah. So he was in marketing there. So he continued that, and I started a business and tried to work it out. And I was so excited. I went to every supplier and, you know, I did Yellow Pages. Back then it was a book version of Yellow Pages. And just did S for stationery, and I went to every supplier, every manufacturer of stationery and paper companies, but I had no idea about how to put together a notebook.
Did they laugh at you?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And, you know, it's funny because a few years later, maybe 10 years later, I think as part of our 10-year anniversary, I invited the people who are most influential as part of starting the business. So I had a speech to each person, and one of my suppliers, I said to him, never laugh at your new customers, because one day they might become your biggest customer. And we did, because he laughed. I had a little schedule where every Friday I would drive to this, when I was manufacturing in Melbourne, I would drive there every Friday to check the quality. And he was like, oh, here she comes again. Oh, and took me aside. It's like, it's really annoying that you come here every Friday. And I was like, well, you know, quality was really important to me.
Yeah.
But
you could have easily been intimidated because you didn't know the retail industry, yeah. right? And somebody saying to you, this is really irritating, go away. You could have easily just said, oh, well, maybe I'm not meant to do this yeah. and stopped. So what stopped you from taking that?
I think I'm
criticism.
Pretty stubborn. Like, you know, that has, of course, its positives and its negatives.
Yeah, of course.
You know, I have a saying, don't say no, say how. So that's kind of my mantra. It's like, if you can't find it this way, you find another way. And you ask, you know, I always ask who. So, you know, I had a lot of supporting mentors during this time. And I really think that that is what makes or breaks a small business to start with, because it's not easy. And, you know, the percentage of small business survive in the first year is pretty low. Mm. And I do think that the ones that survive, obviously you need to have a good product and you need to have an understanding on where you're going. But I do think that not giving up when you actually just, you know, fall for the ninth time, you just get up one more time and yeah. just continue.
What do you think your very hardest moment was, say, in that first 2 years? Oh, there were so many. Yes, I know. This is 2001 it was founded, wasn't it? So we appreciate
yeah,
that.
A little bit before that, actually. Yeah, because 2001 was when we opened the first store.
Okay.
But, I mean, there's so many of them. And there was, I think, the knowledge, not having a business knowledge and understanding the financial side, all that was really challenging. But cash flow was something that was really tough. And always is in retail because it's very seasonal and we never really had a working capital to start with. We got some money injected later on, but I think that was the hardest. I was an expert in negotiating longer payment terms, and I used to have a leverage folders and we couldn't pay everyone on time. So I used to, even our staff sometimes, she has a mortgage, so she needs to be paid this week. Maybe someone else, you know, she lives at home, maybe I can wait for, I mean, this was a very small business, probably not something you can do
yeah.
now. But I was like, oh, do you mind getting paid on Tuesday instead of, you know, this is before everything was systemized and just me in the business. And I used to go with the same with suppliers. But that was a really good skill to have, because when we then started to manufacture offshore, everyone told me that you can't get payment terms in China, for example. And I was like, don't say no, say how. It's because I was so used to negotiating and, you know, even to like, you know, the tax office sometimes. I'm like, can we get a payment plan and stuff like that? I never knew that you could do that. And it was just, you know, being creative because you had to be.
Yeah.
So I think there's, you know, in every hardship, and one of my mentors is Robin Sharma, who wrote The Mind Who Sold His Ferrari. He's most well known for that book. He said to me once, because I did some coaching with him, he said to me, never waste a good crisis. And what he was saying is like, when you go through tough times, it's where you learn a lot and that's where your growth is and that's where you're really out of your comfort zone. So for anybody listening who's going through a tough time, that, you know, tough times never last, but tough people do. And we as a business right now is in a very challenging time because retail is changing and transformation is needed. So I'm not so focusing on having stores in my favorite cities anymore, but we sell across the world online. And, you know, I think we could do a much, much better job on that. It's very challenging, but it's also very exciting.
Basically, you're reinventing things
yeah.
all
yeah.
over again.
Yeah.
Which yeah, I can hear in your voice is really exciting to
yeah,
you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think in a business, you've got to be excited about reinvention.
Yeah,
because if you stay the same, then you're going to die.
Absolutely. Yeah. I just wish, you know, in hindsight, I wish we would have started a little bit earlier. That is another learning and it's part of a business, but definitely I'm excited about transforming completely.
In the middle of all this, you had two children. How did that work?
You know, I think that was a blessing because I was working a lot and a lot of people burn out. And I think got me focused on something different and got me a little bit more balanced.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying for anyone listening, and motherhood is definitely its own challenges and hard, but it was just really to get me to think about something differently versus just always work, work, work. And I think also for me, as I'm assuming most of your audience females, it was also a really good understanding for me as a business owner to understand our teams that had kids, because I didn't have that understanding. I was like, how hard can it be, kind of, you know, view, we'll just, you know, work it out, kind of. That's how I was doing the business. But of course, kids are very different because they have their own lives and their own personalities. So I think that was really, it was actually a really good thing. And then my kids has been really part of the business. So it's funny how Axel now, who's 11 in grade 6, is learning a little bit about business, and he understands margin. He even like as a 4-year-old, he would be sitting in interviews and he'd be saying, "Mom, you forgot to say that." And he's been really, really involved. And he's like, now, help me with social media. He's like, "Mom, you need to post more." So I feel like, you know, I'm raising entrepreneurs and having them part of travel and business and understanding that if you work hard, you can do amazing things, etc.
It's really fantastic that they're learning to be entrepreneurs. But how do you actually keep the kids grounded?
Just live a very privileged life in terms of being able to travel and do all the things with me. But I always used to take him as a child to see homeless at night, just because I didn't want him to not understand that, you know, his life was very special. And so we always used to go for a walk, and sometimes like, "Mom, do we have to go for that walk?" I said, "Yes, we have to go for that walk." And he's now become really, you know, empathetic. So we went to Africa this year and we played cricket. He'd brought some cricket gear with the local kids in Africa and in school that we are supporting through my book. He asked for water, and I said to him, "You can have some water, but you realize there's 500 kids who would have walked 2 hours for school and played as much as you did, and they have no water." And that really got him. So he now, he did a WeFundMe or whatever.
GoFundMe.
And he raised money to get water into that school. So that school now has water. He's very mature in that way. But
incredible.
He's as child as everyone else and you know, challenged me a lot, which is, you know, when you raise independent kids, you also have a lot of discussions on what's possible and not.
I bet they've played back your motto or one of the sayings you've quoted, "Don't say no, say how." Has that happened to you?
All the time, because sometimes I'm like, "Stop it." And they're like, "Mom, you tell the world to dream, so I'm just going to continue it." And it really has rubbed off. I think they are Kiki K products in their own way.
And they're packaged well as
well.
Yes,
they are.
So you launched your first book.
Mm-hmm.
I know that you started dreaming and this was the start of your dream life, but why do you want to share it with 101 million people. Other people?
Yeah. I feel like if I can do it, anyone can. I don't have a specific education. I'm not super smart. I didn't grow up with money or the knowledge and all those kind of things that you often look at people and think they have something special. So I feel like I want to inspire people to do whatever they, it doesn't mean they have to start a business. It could be that you want to, you know, work less or, you know, take a year off or whatever it is. There are so many people out there that kind of perhaps were told as kids that you were really clever, so that you went to a really amazing school and then all of a sudden went into a career that, you know, perhaps was the teacher's or the parents' idea. And regardless if you're there right now, there is an option to change. And I think dreaming is so powerful, because if you are in this amazing career and you might be the one who's supporting the family, and it's hard to kind of see yourself out. And often when we set goals, we look at where we are today and then we move. But if you actually take all your reality away and just said, you know, if I could create my dream life, if I couldn't fail, and if I had all the money, the resources, the knowledge, the energy and the health to do whatever you wanted to do, what would you do? And that often gets us excited about things that perhaps we are not doing, or perhaps things that we like to move towards. I think life is short and we really are in the driver's seats of our own life.
How briefly would you advise someone to translate a dream which might seem really far removed from their day-to-day reality and the job and the mortgage?
Mm-hmm. I actually like to encourage people to write down lots of dreams, you know, asking yourself in different areas, and then really choosing 3 dreams, even if it is really far removed, but really choosing the ones that are really close to your heart, and then start working towards them. And in my book, I have the steps on how to go about it in terms of, you know, brainstorming everything you need to do. And then one of the questions when I have a big dream and have a big idea is like, who can help me? Who can you speak to who are doing something similar to you, or even if it's in a career, like who has that role that you want, and can you somehow either meet them or, you know, listen to a podcast like this where you get a lot of inspiration. I had a thing which I think might be interesting for your listeners, is that one of my dreams was to not have any direct reports.
That was a dream.
Many years ago. Yep.
This is when you had direct reports and you didn't want to have any.
Yep. Yeah. And it's funny because I often interview people and they're like, "Oh, no, but I really want to have more." I'm like, "Why would you want to have more?" Because you're just, you know, you're managing people versus, you know, doing stuff. So I can understand that in a career path perhaps. But for me, I was like, less is more. And I'm not very good at it either. So I rather someone who is really great at that. And I felt like it was taking over my creativity. So I set that as a dream, and it, to me, it was an impossible dream at the time. So for anyone listening, I think sometimes the impossible dreams, let's just write them down anyway, because that's what dreaming is all about. It doesn't have to have an action plan straight away, but just write whatever comes to mind. And I remember, because I was, EO, the Entrepreneurs Organization, and my forum, they said, oh, don't be crazy. That's, of course you can't run a business and not have any direct reports. And I said, I think I can, and it took me a while. And part of having children really helped me with that, because all of a sudden I wanted to use my time by really contribute to what I felt was my strength versus, managing people.
So is that when you went into the creative director role?
Yeah. I did a really good exercise actually, which might be worth us talking about here. I saw Tim Ferriss speak, and obviously has a book, and I read his book, The 4-Hour Work Week.
Yeah.
And 4-hour work is not for me, because I love working. Like, I love what I do, but working 4 hours a day, I thought that would be an interesting way of looking at life. And so, especially when you have kids and, the pickups and stuff, because I also want to be there. So I decided, if I can only work 4 hours a day, what should I be spending my time on? And it's an evolving thing. So I did that and decided to give some stuff away, and obviously reports, etc. And then I evolve that all the time, because obviously we have teams who are much better than me in certain things, and then I evolve as a person as well. So it's this constant thing that I think about all the time.
It's like a constant juggling thing.
Yeah.
It's interesting, because when you dream big and then you set your goals for your dream life and you walk towards your dream life and then you start to actually unlock your dream life, right? And you're then in it. Do you keep dreaming, or do you kind of feel satisfied at that moment in time?
In terms of what I think I'm right now, I'm really satisfied. I live in an amazing life, but it's certainly not perfect. I have a lot of challenges in lots of different areas. And I think part of being a human is growth. The best growth is out of your comfort zone. So what is the next step? But I can't talk for everyone, but I love a new year. I always try to do something different, because otherwise I feel like it's so easy to get comfortable and
have the same year almost.
Yeah.
It's a really
especially
good point.
When you have kids and stuff, it's easy to go to the same holidays. It's easy to move to Sweden over the summer. It's kind of easy to just go into that the same thing. So I always try to do something that is a bit different. And one year I started a book club, and my book group now is like my amazing inspiration in terms of that I can do anything. Like, we're only reading self-help or business books. Now I have people emailing me asking, how can I join? And it's only people that I love in terms of really want to hang with. And it's a diversity of people, so it's not all the same. And it's once a month, and we read a book, and you can turn up, because we all travel a lot. You turn up or not. But even if one person turn up, it's so inspiring and it's incredible.
Yeah, I love that. And I love the way that you are constantly looking for these ways to keep developing and learning. It's definitely a passion.
And another one that I did was also to start a podcast. And that, with all the stuff that I've done, you would think that that was like an easy thing to
do.
No.
We can tell you it's not an easy thing to do.
And I was so anxious and conscious on my English, and I'm very used to this kind of being interviewed,
being the subject,
and then I can, like, it's whatever comes true for me. But interviewing other people is really challenging, because I'm so scattered, and then I think about something else, and then I was like, where were we? And
you are the most gracious interviewer though, because you say thank you to them so much, and it's like, it must be a total pleasure to be interviewed by you.
Thank you. Well, I love it. And it's funny how something that I felt anxious, and I've never had any anxious feeling, because I always feel like I work it out somehow. With this one, I felt really anxious and thinking, oh, I don't know if I could do it, and can I do it every second week and all that kind of stuff. And now it's one of my favorite things to do. And I think that is so true in so many things, whatever you do, and you just have to do it, and you get better and better. Like anything, we know that, but it's sometimes hard.
If you think back now, what advice would you give your 30-year-old self?
Oh, to dream much, much bigger than you possibly think you can do.
Wow. And you don't think you dreamed big?
I think I did, but there are certain things now that I couldn't have imagined. So my lesson in that is like sometimes when you cannot imagine it, because I remember having this dream about opening stores around the world. But when I did the first interview, and so with the first business plan was really only for 12 stores in Australia, just because in terms of you can dream on paper for, you know, 600 stores globally, but it wasn't realistic at the time. But that was the kind of the ultimate goal. But first business plan was 12 stores in Australia. But I was thinking, you know, we can have 40. That was in my head. And, you know, and then I was interviewed by The Age on Sydney Morning Herald here. The journalist asked me, what do you think you can have? So because I was thinking 40 and we had the business plan at 12, which was the more realistic one, and 40 was in my head, I said 40. And the whole way home, I just felt sick thinking, how am I going to do 40? And I now told the world, you know, only
the Sydney Morning Herald newspaper.
I was just like, oh, I'm going to do this. So my point in this is that seemed absolutely impossible. But even though my dream was to actually be global, but it was to just say it out loud. So my learning in that is that sometimes you cannot imagine, like, the big dreams that you have. I mean, you look at someone like Steve Jobs or Oprah Winfrey, all those people who now is like famous for what they're doing. They started somewhere. And that's why I love sharing their stories in my book, because I think we all look at those people and think they are so special and they have it all, but they had to work so hard. And sometimes it's impossible where you start to dream as big.
Totally comes back to that saying on your vision board, which I love, which is, you know, you don't have to be great to be start, but you have to start to be great. And
exactly.
Well, I love that advice. What do you think your single best piece of advice that you've been given is?
Definitely from Paul, my partner, who made me realize that you can do anything that you love. Yeah, he'd really encouraged me to, you know, writing my dreams on paper and actually tell me it was fine to do what you love. You don't have to do things just because you're good at it or because your parents or your school or whatever it is. You can do anything in life. And I think that it was the best advice that I ever got.
What a gift to get.
Hmm? Yeah.
What a gift to get.
Good choice in partner.
Thank you.
Oh, Christina, that's fantastic. Well, our listeners, I'm sure, will be interested to learn more, whether it's about your great podcast or your books or your incredible products, the beautiful notebooks and the light that you get from Kiki K. How can listeners find out more about you and all of those other amazing things you do?
So I think in terms of products for anyone global, obviously our website's at kiki-k.com. But if anyone is interested in following me as a person, I have an Instagram, Christina Kiki K. Obviously we have Kiki K as well, but the one that I do is one where I'm sharing much more in terms of the way I live and stuff. And I often try to share what I'm reading or what I'm doing. So that is probably the best way, and through podcasts as well, because that's where they can learn more, similar to here, where what other people can help to live their best life.
Absolutely. And we'll put all those links on our show notes page on our website as well. So Christina Carlson, thank you so much. It's been a real joy to have this conversation and can't wait to see what, you know, where the business and where you go next, and not to mention young Axel and Tiffany as well. Thanks.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I hope I've given some little experience to help people dream big and make sure that they live their dream life. So thank you for having me.
You certainly have. Thanks, Christina.
Thank you.
You know, I really hope Kiki K gets to survive.
Yeah, absolutely. And hearing Christina talk about, what was that quote? Tough times never last, but tough people do. You know, really shines through in a whole new light, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure does. I mean, she sounded so strong and positive in our conversation, but it's even, you know, that sort of positivity and strength is coming through even now in her social feeds. She's sort of saying thank you to so many people, and she's saying she's remaining optimistic. It's, yeah, quite inspiring to see, really.
Yeah, absolutely. So to all involved with Kiki K and to Christina and family, we're sending you masses of positive energy and hope you can keep your 20-year-old dream alive.
And on the topic of dreams, we're excited to offer three lucky listeners the chance to win a free copy of Christina's book, Your Dream Life Starts Here. Simply go to our website, that's don'tstopusnow.co, and click on the win button in the top right to enter. It's super easy and super fast, and you'll be very glad you did.
Well, that's this episode done and dusted. Stay tuned for our next episode with entrepreneur and Cartier Women's Initiative Award judge, Bobby Marlab.
Oh, that was a great conversation. Ciao for now, everyone.